905 CJD 800 time. Welcome to the Home Improvement Show. My name is Dan in for Ken, and Walter Assia of Renovco joins us on the CJD phones today. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I have to apologize ahead of time because I have a cold, and I was hoping that my voice is going to come out as sexy with a cold, but it's more like congested than anything. So
it certainly sounds sexy enough for home improvement, and I hope you feel better.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Walter, given what's been going on here the past couple of days, Thursday and Friday, the rain, I suppose Renovco's phones ring off the hook during days like these.
Yeah, it was a crazy time because, you know, once you have multiple downpours like that, especially in a very short period of time, what happens is a lot of the flat roofs in particular gets over flooded, and then the capacity of the drain does not take all this water. So you have multiple backups, sewer backups. We had a whole bunch of sewer backups as well because the city sewers could not take the downpour as well. So it's been a couple of days that we had a lot of night calls, unfortunately, and the guys are tired, but it is what it is. You know, that's what we're here for in these situations more particularly.
So in a worst case scenario, like when you get a call and there's, you know, let's say a foot of water in a basement, take me through the process. Like what does the flood team at Renovco do?
I mean, the first thing you want to do is, if you have a lot of water in the basement, is you want to shut off the electrical. You want to pump the water out as fast as possible. As soon as the water is pumped out, so we bring in pumps and hoses to pump the water to the outside. Now you want to start the drying and the decontamination process. Mm-hmm. So in case where you have a basement that is full of water, all the material that is wet have to be taken out and discarded almost immediately, within 24 hours max. But, you know, the next 24 hours, whatever you could do can determine how far you have to go with your demolition and decontamination. And that's why we say immediately call for emergency work. There is, you know, a lot of the people that called Renovco have tried to reach out for the insurance companies. And obviously, in cases like this, you're calling, but everybody else is calling, so they couldn't get through. The most important as a policy holder is to minimize the damage in your home. First of all, you have to act as a homeowner that is there to protect their home. Then worry about the rest of the stuff later. You can't wait, for example, if the insurance company only calls you back Monday, you can't keep the water in your basement till Monday. That's a mistake.
Yes, of course.
So it has to be done. You have to act right away. Get the house to a place where it's actually safe. Discard the water, take out the cut off the walls, depending on how high the water went, we decide whether it's 4 inches, 2 feet, or 4 feet. Then we decontaminate. Then we put the drying equipment. And then you could take your time and get the insurance to come and do everything else. But for you to wait, we've been to cases where the client waited 2-3 days, and then we come there and there's mold everywhere just because he couldn't get through to his insurer or they were out of town or what have you. So very important that, you read the fine print on your policy.
Yeah.
One of the things that they ask you to do is to act like a good homeowner and to be responsible and to do the emergency work to minimize the damages as fast as possible.
Yes, of course. And it's in my head I pictured, you know, I've seen the dryers that you set up in homes. But so you do the decontamination first before the drying.
That's correct, especially in a sewer backup, because in a sewer backup situation, there is a common mistake that is done that they put the blowers first, and that's the worst thing you could do, because what you're doing now is you're spreading the viruses and the bacteria everywhere else in the house. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that everything is discarded, everything is decontaminated, then you put your drying equipment and your dehums and so on and so forth. The other thing that is very important to mention in a case like this is the insurance that you have specifically for basements. We're running more and more into this problem. Mm-hmm. Insurance companies are limiting how much you're insured for an abatement case. You look at policies and there's 10,000, 5,000, 20,000. There are insurance companies that will give you an open insurance, meaning higher limits. So if your basement is not finished and you have, let's say, 10,000, that's fine. But if you have a finished basement with a home theater and a bathroom and so on and so forth, make sure that the value that your basement, more in particular, what is insured for. And if you don't find that you have adequate insurance, don't wait for the flood to call them to up it. Do it, like, right away.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing as well is document what you have, right?
Yes, of course.
What we mostly don't know is that contents, I mean, in a case where you have lots of contents, you know, always take pictures of what you have. You know, it adds up. Clothes, coats, boots, you know, and so in a case on the sewer backup, we look at them as older things, but you have the right to have these replaced to replacement value.
Okay? Yeah.
So you have a damaged boot and the boot is $100. Well, you have the right to get $100 for the boot, right?
Of course.
Or buy a brand new boot. So these are the things that we always encourage, and these are things that you have to do preemptively, not wait for the flood to happen and then have to worry about it. And when I say in the basement, I mean that the whole house, really. So just document what you have in valuables, in œuvres d'art, God forbid if you have a fire or something. It's always good to have these these proofs in hand. It makes the claim much smoother, yeah, and faster and less stressful for you as well.
And that's especially if you live in a flood-prone area.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That is definitely correct. Well, having said that, we are all living with the global warming right now. We are all living under the spell, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, like, we got so many phone calls in NDG, for example, for water damages, and it's not a flood area. Just because there's a lot of flat roofs in NDG, and the downpour have created a lot of damages in that area. So right now, you don't know where it's coming from. When it comes to water damage, unfortunately, sometimes it's a sewer, sometimes it's from the river, sometimes it's just from, French drains that stopped working. So it could be really from anything and anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about the flat roofs and homes that are not, you know, quote unquote, in a flood area, it's not just the rain, but the wind that's kind of slapping it against the house, against the roof, against places where it can get in, right?
For sure. I mean, the house is getting tested. You take what happened on Thursday.
Yeah.
I mean, every home, every foundation, every roof got tested. You know, if you have a bit of caulking that is missing, the water is going to find its way through a window or a brick pointing or a chimney or anything like that. And, you know, funny enough, a lot of the calls we got were 3-4 days later because the water took some time in smaller cases. To start showing itself and revealing itself in ceilings and, you know, and walls.
Sure.
Because not every water damage necessarily is a huge one that we're thinking about of buckets of water and you have to extract it. Sometimes it's just, normal seepage that creates also headaches for you and you have to take care of it and not ignore it.
Yeah, that's it. And that's like a telltale sign. Quote unquote normal seepage is maybe some maintenance work needs to be taken care of.
For sure. Yeah. And we have to also understand that when you start seeing it on the drywall, it's not as small of a quantity as you actually think it is. Sometimes we say, oh, it looks like it's just a few drops. You have to understand, it's coming from the roof. You have an R40, sometimes R50 insulation. So the water have actually sucked through all of that, went into your vapor barrier, traveled downstream somewhere to the lowest point, and found its way in.
Yes.
That takes weight to happen. So that's not really two drops, because two drops would have been sucked in by the insulation and would not have been able to puncture the vapor barrier. And that's what we always say. Do not look the other way and ignore it. Face it head on, see where it's coming from, go in the attic, see how, you know, where the water really came in from the roof, and then deal with it and repair it. Because if it came once, it's going to come again and again and again. and it's going to cost you a lot more money in the future than you think.
Right. It's the Home Improvement Show on CJD 800. That's the voice of Walter Assey of Renovco. We'll take in your calls at 514-790-0800. I guess, Walter, we'll go right to the phones. This is Steve. Hi there, Steve.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'd like to know, because last year I installed a stove vent, okay, and it's venting just under the soffits of the house. That's the only thing. And this past winter, it was the first winter with the vent, I opened up the soffits just to see if the air was getting in, and I noticed it was all frosty and then damp, you know, the wood. So my question is there a way I can get, like, an extension to that vent? Like, maybe extend maybe 3 feet away so it vents farther away. Is that possible? Because I've looked all over. I can't find any.
No. I mean, you could extend the duct over, but it's not really not cosmetically pleasing. My question is how far it is from the vent.
It's
from the soffit, right. I should say.
I would say it's about maybe in the... it's right underneath. I'd say it's about maybe half a foot, maybe 6 inches. But the vent is turned downwards, so you can see the air does go down. But when it gets windy, you know,
it's downdrafts that you the back drafts is what you really have to worry about. Like you said, when it gets windy and so on and so forth. I do have a trick for you that will help tremendously. And without having to ruin the look of your house, what you're going to do is you're going to take out that section of the soffit right there on top of the vent, and you're going to put a sheet of plywood or presswood, anything that you have in your disposal, preferably plywood because it resists more the cold and the condensation, and you're going to calculate about... I would say 12 inches from each side. Usually it's actually 3 feet center. So 3 feet center from where the vent is, and you're going to install it there.
Oh, yeah.
So what that's going to do is that in that particular area, your soffit is not open. It's going to be blocked. So it's not great for ventilation, but it's such a small area. If you have a well-ventilated soffit, it's not going to really affect the overall health of the roof.
Because I do have, because we don't have a lot of openings on the roof, and we do get ice buildup. That was my, so if I do that, maybe there'll be more ice buildup.
Well, let me tell you that if you have any heat and coming out from that vent, you're going to be getting even more because you're going to be getting condensation and all kind of other issues as well. So that's not going to really be helping, especially like you said, in windy days. If you have issues with the vent itself, maybe you should look to solve these issues in general by stereo vents, maybe around the attic, check the amount of insulation you have in the roof. That's something that you should not like look the other way on, because number one, it's going to be getting your roof to age much, much quicker, and it's going to cost you possibly ice damming, which means water infiltration, which means if you have condensation, you have to take mold, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So you have to look at this as a whole system.
Right. Because we have a bungalow.
And try to solve it once and for all. Now, if you don't want to go 3 feet, even if you would go in that particular area, few inches on each side, I would say 6 to 8 inches from each side, it's a lot better. It's going to decrease. You're going to see that you're going to have an important decrease in the condensation that's going to happen, and it's going to help tremendously.
So you're saying plywood, eh? Should it be treated wood or something? Treated?
It doesn't really, I mean, look, it's not exposed because you're covering it with soffit afterwards. So it doesn't really matter any type of plywood, because plywood does have resistance to exterior. If you want to have exterior plywood, even the better. It doesn't hurt, but you don't have to go as far, because now plywood is extremely expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So but, even half an inch plywood.
Why would mold too if it gets damp, the wood? Wouldn't it mold?
What's that?
Can't the plywood mold over or get damp?
Well, just remember, there's a couple of things. You're still going to put the soffit over it, so it's not in direct contact. And plywood does have resistance. You don't have, it's not a continuous stream of condensation. You're going to have it in those windy days.
That's true.
Plus, because the fact that you have the water, the air coming in through the soffit is always going to dry it. So it's not going to be important enough to decay the plywood. I mean, you see plywood, exterior plywood all the time. It's there for a long, long time. It does not really decay. And a trick, another trick to you, for you, in order to avoid that, if you want to actually elongate even more the life of the plywood, if you prime it and paint it, now it becomes treated, and that will help even more.
Right.
But again, it all boils down to how much condensation you're having. If you're having it intermittently, you know, in the windy days, and then you have all the wind that's coming through the soffits all year long, you're not going to have enough that's going to rot that plywood or cause any decay for it. But again, in the painting a small sheet of plywood like that is going to take you 5 minutes, and it's going to protect the plywood for much longer. So it's worth for you to do that protection.
All right. Okay. Got to run, Steve. Okay. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Hi there, Carl.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, how can we help you?
Walter, I'm going to be spray foaming my basement. When I removed the old insulation, I found this black bituminous type material. This was it was built in the 50s. So my question is, will spray foam stick to anything, or do I need to prepare the surface at all?
That's a great question. It depends how, I want to say, I don't know if it's the right word to use, but how gooey it is,
mm-hmm.
or how dried up it is.
It is dry. I mean, it's been there since 59, so I touched it. It's not sticky at all.
It's not sticky. So there's a good chance that it will stick. There's a very good chance that it will stick. We've had cases where we tested it, and it does not stick adequately just because the material did not dry sufficiently enough. Now, what you could do in the, just again, as a precautionary measure, is you could try to sand it and grind it.
Yeah,
as much as you can, just to get it a bit roughened up, and
yeah.
then you can apply your urethane. Just because it's hell to go through the whole process of scratching all that urethane out, and then redoing it afterwards. So, I would just you know, kind of pass with my grinder and kind of roughen it up a little bit, just to make sure that you have that adequate surface for it to stick properly.
Oh, okay. Yes, and the spray foam, they said that you don't need a vapor barrier if you're going to be spraying at least 2 inches. So my question is, the back of the studs, the 2x4s, to the wall is just 1 inch. Is that considered, I mean, I'm going to be having 2 inches, but behind the wood, it's only 1 inch. Is that considered also 2 inches, or do I need to have the studs move completely forward by 1 inch?
No, the void counts as the inches. So from the concrete itself all the way to where you're finishing it inside, this is how you're measuring it. So if you
correct.
Have 2 inches from the concrete to the hot side,
okay.
that's what you have.
Okay.
Now, having said that, the magic number you're looking for a vapor barrier, quote unquote, is 3 inches and not 2 inches.
Okay,
so you want to have the optimal result.
Okay.
Okay. So if you can get up to 3 inches, that's awesome. 2 inches is a lot better than nothing, and you know, it also works. But 3 inches is really where you want to get to when it comes to spray foaming.
Now, that's sometimes where you don't have to put a plastic. Is that what you're talking about? You don't need to put a
correct.
Plastic over it. Okay.
That's correct. That's correct. And it's really the best form of insulation. You know, if you look at all the other alternatives, number one, where what you save in the material, you put in the labor. For example,
that's right.
You know, sometimes what you see is contractors wanting to save some money, so what they do is they stick styrofoam, tongue and groove it on the foundation, and then PL that, and then build their 2x4s, and then put their fiberglass insulation, and put their vapor barrier. Yes, you save on material, but you paid a lot more on the labor.
Okay. Well, listen, I hope that helps. We've got to run for news. Thanks so much for the call, Carl. Walter Assey is president of Renovco. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
You might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
I love that. That's how I sound when I go to the hardware stores. I'm looking for a thingamajig for my whatchamacallit. It's the Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey of Renovco is on the CJD phones at 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and you can text in to 514-800. Walter, our last call, Carl, was saying that he opened his walls to do some insulating, and he talked about this black sticky stuff. What is that?
That's usually tar that you used to use in the old days to waterproof the foundations. Not the greatest practice as far as I'm concerned to do it from the inside, because mm-hmm. you don't want to allow the water to come in and then trap it there. You know, you can grind it down. It's easily grindable with any diamond blade. So you can get rid of it, and you can have, the only thing I would caution is to have some type of a HEPA attachment, like a vacuum attachment while you're grinding, because it does make a lot of dust.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, if you're doing your basement, that's a great time to take care of these things and not just kind of, you know, same thing when you have paintable foundations. You shouldn't really be painting foundations from the inside. That's another mistake that happens as well. So he's going to be doing the right thing by grinding it down. We were also talking about the insulation and price of material versus labor, and that's an important thing to mention, because it's a mistake that is very common. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a contractor would recommend a material that you think you're saving money on, but you're actually, especially if you're paying the guys by the hour, you're paying a lot more for labor to get it done for a more inferior quality material.
Okay.
Even contractors were guilty of such mistakes. Sometimes they calculate more the material than their time, and believe it or not, their time is worth a lot more than the material. So if you have a material that is more expensive, but it's more efficient and it's faster to apply, my advice is always to opt for that. Because number one, you're going to have a better quality and it's going to be done faster. And it's, in a lot of cases, it's going to save you a lot of trouble in the future.
Yeah,
for example,
sure.
When you put fiberglass insulation in the exterior wall, if that fiberglass insulation gets wet, it loses its R value forever.
Yes.
Because you're going to have pockets of dampness in that wall, and you're not going to be able to see it because you didn't know, you can't see through the walls where you have wet insulation, damp insulation, so on and so forth. Urethane does not do that. If it gets wet, it doesn't lose its R value. It acts as a great vapor barrier and does an amazing job, and so on and so forth. So there's really a lot of pros versus cons when it comes to urethane versus, for example, fiberglass insulation.
What about the stuff that, depending on the space you're insulating in your house, it's a machine that blows, from what I'm told, old newspaper. Does that make sense?
We don't use that anymore. You have the blown-in fiberglass insulation.
Okay.
So that is, to apply it fast is great. Typically, mm-hmm. it saves you a lot of money on labor. That's correct. But where you pay a very heavy price is when you have a water damage, or when you need to make an opening in the ceiling for any reason, then all of that nice insulation falls on you, and then you have to shovel it, and then you have to reapply it.
Right.
It's not a practical for long-term usage, as far as if you have a water infiltration or you want to do renovation or you should take a ceiling down. There's just a lot more that you have to take care of in this case. But as far as efficiency, it works for sure. And labor, it saves you a lot of money, because the alternative is you put those bat insulation that are R40 and you walk around and you want to make sure that you don't miss the gaps and so on and so forth. So it's not a very practical alternative. Having mm-hmm. said that, we are also now, although it's a lot more expensive, also opting in a lot of cases where somebody have the budget for it, to go even with urethane insulation in the attic, because that's a fantastic thing to do. It's just, it saves you a whole bunch of money.
Right.
Especially if you are doing major renovation, it's much easier to do if the ceilings are open. What you do is you build some type of blocking like plywood or anything like that, and then you shoot it from beneath. And then you have about 3 to 6 inches of insulation sprayed. That creates you a natural vapor barrier. And then you don't have to worry about that insulation for life. Plus, you don't have to worry about walking in the attic with all this insulation being moved around and so on and so forth. So it's a much more clean, efficient way of insulating an attic, specifically if you need to go to the attic multiple times for different reasons. It just makes it a lot more efficient.
514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, 1-800-491-CJD. Those are our phone numbers. And you can also text your questions for Walter Assey into 514-800. And Walter, I have a text here from a listener who's asking about cleaning the gutters on his or her roof. This is something you're usually supposed to get done at the end of the winter, right? As spring approaches.
Usually it's after the fall. If you can have it done right before the winter, that would be awesome, because that's when all the leaves get blown into the gutters.
Yeah.
You know, usually gutter cleaning, I like to do it twice a year.
Okay.
Simply because, you know, it could create a lot of... Number one, it doesn't cost much to do.
Yeah.
Pay someone about $100, and if you don't want to do it yourself, or it's easy enough to do it yourself. But what it could save you in return is really a lot more. Sometimes we go to homes and then we see that the bricks in certain area is deteriorated. And the reason being is because they have a faulty gutter, and every time it rains, it overflows. It goes to where these bricks are and just corrodes the bricks at a much faster level. That's going to cost you a lot of money to replace. Or you could have a lot of water that you're overcharging your French drain, and you're going to have some water coming into your basement and so on and so forth. So the idea is anything that will help kind of channel the water out from your house as far as possible is a good thing for you to do. You know, and especially in certain things that are easy and not too expensive to do. So I would do it. I like to do it a lot after the fall. There's because that's where you find most blockages and issues. And that's where you really need it to be working the most, is in the winter when, you know, you have those mild temperatures and you don't want the ice backup to happen because your gutters are frozen or blocked or so on and so forth.
Makes sense to me. All right, let's go back to the phones. This is Janet. Hi there, Janet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Okay, gentlemen, I need advice. I'm in a position where I think I have to replace the old wood, 1950s original wood around a window frame and around some door frames. I've been recommended to use MDF, but my problem is I don't trust it. Because like when you buy it at the hardware store, only 3 of the 4 sides are primed. If I use it around a window, should I prime it? How durable is it? Is the hardware store quality adequate? Should I go somewhere to get better quality MDF if I can't afford wood?
Those are a lot of questions.
Yeah.
great questions. And I'm going to follow it up even with more questions for you.
Great.
I'm hoping that you're talking about interior wood, not the exterior of the windows, right?
Yes, interior application.
Very important to precise, because, you know, and the reason you're replacing them is because they get, water damage, or they're old, or...
Well, the problem is my father had a very long-term tenant, and after 25 years, this person is leaving, but the problem is So I would like to refresh it with paint because it's in a horrible color. Okay. But the problem is I'm dealing with layers of different paint, and paint has been chipped and then painted over, so it looks awful.
Okay.
I have an option of maybe stripping it, but that's a lot of effort and I may not have enough time.
That's
so
right.
The option of replacing everything with MDF seems very viable, but MDF is a lot cheaper than wood. But I'm also concerned that it's against a window. I don't mind putting it around an interior door or a baseboard, but anywhere near a window, I'm a little bit suspect. And if I use it, how do I prepare it? Because I'm thinking I should probably go to extra effort to prepare it, because if I buy it at the store, only 3 of the 4 sides of the MDF are primed, and the side that you don't see is not primed.
Okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do, Janet. Let me put you on hold. Don't go away, because we're over time for traffic, and then we're going to get into your window trim in just a couple of seconds.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
When last you joined us, we were online with Janet, who had some questions for Walter about replacing wooden window trim with MDF. What say you, Walter?
Well, I mean, first of all, for those listeners that don't know what MDF is, MDF is, it's what you call medium density fireboard. It's usually more commonly used simply because it's more cost effective. And the material is like have less warping, there's less imperfections in it, except it's a softer material. And it is more, if it gets humidity, it's more susceptible to swell. Plus, it's not as easy to have a good finish with like nail holes versus, for example, you use poplar or pine.
Okay.
So it has its pros and cons. Cost efficiency is one of them. But if you were to work with MDF, make sure you're buying the MDF that is CARB compliant. Meaning, because a lot of the overseas companies, a lot of it is imported from overseas, by the way. And, you know, if it's not CARB compliant, that means they are, it's not really safe. They have not used all the right glues or products in the process. So some of it could have carcinogenic reactions.
Oh.
That's why we always look for CARB compliant.
Could you
most
please,
of the stuff that is sold here... And the good news is most of the stuff that is sold here through hardware stores is CARB compliant.
And but we I'm have sorry to interrupt. What is CARB? Is it C-A-R-V or CARB?
C-A-R-B. CARB
Excellent.
Compliant.
Okay.
So whatever you usually you find in a big hardware store, it is CARB compliant. Although we have found in secondary markets things that were not CARB compliant. I don't know how they got it, but they got it. So that's important to mention. It's rare, but it is out there. Having said that, specifically if your windows are old and they're susceptible for condensation and cold coming in and so on and so forth, I would not even look at MDF. I would look more into a jointed pine. There's not a huge cost difference between the two. Okay, because when you're thinking of wood and you're thinking oak and maple and so on and so forth, yes, you're paying top dollar. But if you're buying jointed pine, it's way more resistant. And as soon as you paint it, it becomes a lot more resistant. So you prime and you paint that, and that becomes very resistant. You're not paying a bigger amount of money. But on the long run, especially that you're saying it's a rental apartment, it's easier to fix. So, you know, an MDF, it gets damaged. It's not easy to fix.
That's right.
Pine gets damaged. You could use wood filler and you fix it and you sand it and it looks like it was not touched before. So again, on the long term, I'm a jointed pine preacher. Yes, you pay maybe a slight percentage higher than MDF, but in these particular areas, it pays you back.
Thank you very much. The only problem is when I go to the hardware store and I see the jointed pine, the pieces are very thin. Mm-hmm. And I'm very sure that if I can find something thicker, I'll have better quality and it'll have a better finish in the end. If I can't find it at the hardware store, where else can I go to find jointed pine?
There are multiple places that you could go to. Usually you go to more specialty places like Langevin et La Forêt.
Langevin and La Forêt.
That's correct. So that is a place that really specializes to, they mostly specialize to sell cabinet makers and what have you, but they have a big selection of wood. Boiserie Raymond, Bois d'Or, all of these guys also have a big selection. So they're more specialty places, you know, and sometimes you could find it in the hardware stores. I've actually bought. What thickness are you looking for, just out of curiosity?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
What thickness are you looking for? When you say they're not thick, what,
oh,
what is the thickness?
What I see in the hardware store is, because unless it's an even slab end to end and side to side, usually it's angled, and I agree it makes it look nice, but when it angles down, when it slopes down to the thinnest part, it's really only like 2 to 3 millimeters thick, and I'm hoping for, you know, something like a quarter inch thick, like the
okay.
old minimum right. minimum that I'm seeing on the old trim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of understand what you're saying right now. So we have to. I want to ask the question differently. Are you thinking about the casings around the window? We're talking about just the
yes,
window
it's the casing.
Trims.
That's
the casing, because when
casing.
You use it, it's where trims. It's okay. So, I mean, again, if you want to have something a bit more specialized, these will be the places to go to.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a lot more selection, but having said that, I've seen already nice trim, nice casements that are a quarter inch or half an inch even thick. So maybe, you know, when you're doing your shopping, just expand your horizons. There are, when we talk about the big hardwood stores, there are also other stores that you could visit, like Patrick Morin, for example, is
yeah.
another location that you might find, or Lefebvre Benoit.
I'm sorry, what was the second one? Something Benoit?
Lefebvre Benoit.
Lefebvre Benoit, thank you.
That's yeah. correct. That's correct. And these guys tend to be more catering. They might have a lot more lumber, you know, in their selection, because they cater a lot to, like, new construction builds and stuff. So builders use them on a more regular basis. So you might have a bigger and wider selection there as well.
You know, thank you so much, because as a just a regular person, I mean, you know, when you own a house or you buy a house, you don't get the owner's manual. You on a car, you might get, and there's so much information online that's differing, and basically, you're right. I am very close-minded. All I'm thinking about is what I can get at the hardware store, and I don't think about, not that I would have known either, about trying other places. Thank you.
That's what we're here for, Janet. Thanks so much for the call.
Look, I'm guilty of the same thing, Dan. If it's outside construction, that's what I do. If I want to go buy a computer, I go to Best Buy, right? So
yeah.
We're all kind of programmed to what's out there and readily available, but we need to expand our horizon. And the thing is, with searching the internet, what you're really searching is sometimes conflicting views that actually confuse you. So not everything that you could take with a grain of salt. You should take everything actually with a grain of salt. And the other thing is, it's the person that is the most marketing that's going to market themselves out there. So sometimes the secondary stores are more fitted really to your needs, and that's where you can find a lot more stuff. So
absolutely.
And that's, to think outside the box.
And that's why this show exists, and that's why you're on the show. I really appreciate it, as always, Walter. Will we have you in studio next week?
100%. I'm already starting to feel better. My voice is getting better as it's progressing, so for sure I'm going to be coming. It will be a pleasure to see you in person as
awesome.
Well.
Awesome. 514-856-9993, renovco.com. Walter Assey, thanks very much. Be well.
My pleasure, sir. Have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too. My name is Dan Laxer. The Car Show is up next with Lisa Christensen, who also wasn't able to make it in. So I'll be here with you for another hour with Lisa on the phone. Grab a line now at 514-790-0800.
The Home Improvement Show, brought to you by Electrica, Montreal's trusted team of home electrical experts. Electrica with a K.ca.